Chapter 52. "Drink yourself blind, then," Aegon said. He didn't care if the king heard him. He didn't care if the king killed him. "Just when I thought I could deal with this bastard. He disgraces his own daughter and shames a man who's given everything he loves to serve the throne." Aegon had been able to steer the king through the marriage of Logan Gyre and Janine Gunder. But the king had hated the idea. He was jealous of Logan's looks and intelligence, jealous of how much people approved of his choice, and angry that Janine had been excited to marry Logan rather than resigned to it. But if Aegon had done one valuable thing in his 10 years of serving this hell-spawned brat, it had been convincing the king to appoint Logan crown prince. Not that Logan would ever forgive him, but it was for the good of the realm. Sometimes duty required a man to do things he would do almost anything to avoid. It had been duty that had compelled Aegon to serve Aelyn the Ninth, and only duty. Like Aegon, Logan wasn't a man who would shirk his duty, but also like Aegon. That didn't mean he had to like it. Logan would probably hate Aegon for the rest of his life, but Senaria would get a good king. With Logan's intelligence, popularity, and integrity, the country might even become something more than a den of thieves and murderers. Aegon was willing to pay the price, but it didn't sit well with him. He'd seen himself in Logan's eyes, realizing he was pledged to a destiny he would never have chosen. He'd seen the look on Cyra Drake's face. Logan would live with the guilt of that betrayal for the rest of his life. The sight had seared him. Aegon had barely been able to touch his food tonight. The king tossed back the rest of his wine. The nobles were still buzzing. It wasn't the pleasant hum of conversation usual at Midsummer's Eve. Their tones were hushed, their glances furtive. Everyone offered an opinion on what the king was doing, why he would appoint an heir and then insult him in the same breath. It was madness. Slowly, the king emerged from his tears and silence. He stared around the great hall with hate-filled eyes. His lips moved, but Aegon had to lean close to hear what he was saying. He wasn't surprised to hear the king muttering curses, one after another, droning on and on, mindless in his rage. Then the king burst out laughing. The hall quieted once more, and the king laughed louder. He pointed at one of the nobles, an unassuming count named Burrs. Everyone followed the king's finger and stared at Count Burrs. The count stiffened and reddened, but the king said nothing. His attention wandered, and he started cursing to himself again. For long moments, nobles continued staring at Count Burrs, then looked at the king. Then, Chancellor Stigler, who was seated at the head of the table, stood up with a cry and shouted, "There's something in the food!" The Chancellor tottered and collapsed back into the chair, his eyes rolling up in his head. Next to him, a man the king had always hated, Lord Rule, suddenly slumped forward, his face smacked into his plate, and he lay still. The king laughed. Aegon turned to him. The king wasn't even looking at Lord Rule, but the timing couldn't have been worse. Someone cried, "We're poisoned! The king has poisoned us!" Aegon turned to see who had shouted, but he couldn't tell. Had a servant said it? Surely no servant would dare. Another voice took up the shout. "The king! The king's poisoned us!" Laughing, the king jumped to his feet and stumbled drunkenly. He shouted obscenities as the great hall erupted in chaos. Chairs squeaked as lords and ladies stood. Some of them wobbled and fell. An old lord started retching onto his plate. A young lady collapsed, vomiting. Aegon was on his feet, shouting orders to the soldiers. The side door by the head table burst open, and a man in gyre livery pushed in, holding his hands up to show he was unarmed. His livery was torn and bloody. A gash bled beside his eyes, streaming blood down his face. Gyre livery? None of Logan's servants were here tonight. Treachery! The servant shouted. Help! Soldiers are trying to murder Prince Logan! The king's soldiers are trying to murder Prince Logan! We're outnumbered! Please help! Aegon turned to the king's guards, drawing his sword. There has to be some mistake. You, and you, come with me. He turned to the bleeding messenger. Can you take us to the... No! The king bellowed, his laughter instantly turning to rage. But sire, we have to protect... You will not take my men! They will stay here! You will stay here, and you, Brant! You're mine! 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 To Aegon, it seemed he saw the king for the first time. He'd seen Aelin the Ninth as a foul, wicked child for so long that he'd forgotten what a foul, wicked child with a crown could do. Aegon looked to the king's guards. Disgust was written on their faces. He could tell they ached to go defend Logan, their prince, but duty forbade them from disobeying their king. Logan. Their prince. Suddenly, it became so simple. Duty and desire became one for the first time in years. Captain Arturian! Aegon barked in his command voice so that every royal guard heard him. Captain, what's your duty if the king dies? The squat man blinked. Sir, my duty would be to protect the new king, the prince. Long live the king, Aegon said. The king was staring at him, confused. His eyes widened as Aegon's sword swung back. Aelin was halfway through a curse when Aegon's sword struck his head off. King Aelin Gunder the Ninth's corpse hit the table and knocked over chairs before coming to rest on the floor. Before any of the guards could attack him, Aegon raised his sword over his head with both hands. I'll answer for this, I swear. Kill me if you must, but now your duty is to the prince. Save him! For a second, none of them moved. The rest of the panic in the hall seemed far away. The ladies screaming, men shouting, servants armed only with meat knives trying to defend their retching lords, shouts of treachery and murder ringing in the air. Then Captain Arturian shouted, The king is dead! Long live the king! To the prince! To King Gyre! Together, Aegon, the king's guards, and a dozen knife-wielding nobles ran from the great hall. Before Kylar got within sight of West Kingsbridge, he slowed to a walk. He willed himself to be a shadow, and looked at himself. He looked like a raggedly cut piece of darkness. That was good. Durzo had told him that the ragged edges obscured the humanness of his figure and made a wet boy harder to recognize. Kylar thought that his talent would also be muffling his steps. He wanted it to. But he had no idea if it was. He couldn't afford to find out the hard way. He rounded the corner and saw the guards. West Kingsbridge was controlled with a large gate, like the castle's own gates. Hand-thick oak reinforced with iron, 20 feet high and spiked along the top with a smaller gate inset. The big mailed guards looked nervous. One was fidgeting, awkwardly turning his whole head to look to the sides. The other was more calm, pointedly staring every direction except down the river. Kylar came closer. He recognized the men despite their helmets, and not only because the twins had matching lightning bolt tattoos on their faces. They were bashers, and good ones. Lefty, he was the one with the crooked nose, and Bernard. Kylar looked where Bernard wasn't looking. In the darkness, an unwieldy barge squatted on the river like a beached sea cow. Its doors were open, but no one held any lights. But darkness no longer affected Kylar's eyes. If he'd had more time, he would have marveled about that. As night fell, if anything, his vision improved as the shadows became more uniform. Through the open doors of the barge, he saw rank upon rank of soldiers. Each wore Cenarian livery, but with a red kerchief tied around one arm. Common soldiers with kerchiefs on their left arm, officers with them on their right. The soldiers weren't Cenarian. Under their helmets, secreted in the shadows of the night, Kylar saw the stark, cold features of Northmen, hair as black as a raven's wing, and eyes as blue as frozen lakes. They were big, raw-boned men, weathered and hardened from exposure to the elements and battle. So they weren't just Kaladorans. They were Kaladoran Highlanders, the God King's fiercest, most elite troops, all of them. In the daylight, that would be obvious to any Cenarian in the castle, but at night, it would take time for the Cenarian soldiers to realize that they were being attacked by a foreign enemy. The Cenarian soldiers would figure out that the armbands were what the Kaladorans were using to identify each other, but it would take time. Each new group that encountered the Kaladorans would have to learn it for themselves. Kylar saw another barge pulling up the river, only 100 paces away. Kaladoran Highlanders tended to be broader and deeper of chest than most Kaladorans, and while a few free tribes still held out in the mountains, those who had been absorbed into the Empire had become its most feared fighters. 400 or 500 Highlanders. Kylar couldn't tell, but he guessed that the other barge was full of the elite soldiers, too. If so, Kalador meant to take the castle tonight. The rest of the country would crumple like a body deprived of its head. Several witches were talking as they climbed the switchbacks from the water up to the bridge. They were scanning the sky over the castle, apparently looking for some sign. Indecision held Kylar frozen. He had either to get inside to save Logan. Surely Roth would have either Hugh or Durzo kill all the dukes, especially after all of Logan's fighting on the Kaladoran border. Just as surely, the murder would happen shortly, if it hadn't already. Kylar could go inside and try to stop the hit, or he could try to oppose the Kaladorans out here. By myself? Madness! But just watching the barge pull closer to the bridge made him furious. He knew he should feel no loyalty to Cenaria, but he was loyal to Logan and Count Drake. If this army got into the castle, it would be a massacre. So he needed to fight inside and outside. Great. Kylar looked at the Sakage imposters manning the bridge. Bashers wouldn't know or care about the bridge's defenses, much less have the discipline to dismantle them. All they had done was turn the crank that lifted the massive iron river gate. Then, in the sky above the castle, Kylar saw a long arc of blue-green flame. He started walking. The witches looked pleased. They confirmed with an officer who started barking orders. One of the Kaladorans raised a torch and waved it twice. Lefty and Bernard took torches of their own, walked to either side of the bridge, and waved twice. All clear. Right. Kylar drew retribution. As it hissed out of the scabbard, the bashers turned. Lefty blinked and leaned forward. With the torches in their hands blotting out their night vision, all they saw was a thin strip of dark metal bobbing and floating through the air. Then it moved with terrible speed. In a moment, both men were dead. Kylar replaced the torch he'd plucked from Bernard's hand and checked the men on the barges. They had already formed up, and were walking, single file, up the narrow switchbacks that led to the bridge. Grabbing the keys off Bernard's body, Kylar opened the gate and slipped through the inset door. The crank and the release for the river gate were there. The gate itself was simply a massive, counterweighted portcullis that could drop into the water. In this case, onto a ship. Kylar threw the release. The river gate dropped 2 feet and didn't crunch. It clanged. Kylar looked over the side of the bridge. The river gate had slammed down onto magical stops that glowed and sparked in the darkness. Witches were on the deck of the first barge, shouting. He ran into the guard station. There was a fire pit with a cauldron full of stew, cooking paraphernalia, a helmet, several cloaks, chests for the men's personal belongings, and a set of knuckle bones on the low table. There was a closet full of old broad carpets stuffed in fat buckets. Kylar rushed out of the guard station. Surely the king wouldn't have left his military bridge with only that defense. The pilings of the bridge were wood, sheathed in iron, impervious to fire. The sheathed wood still got wet, but couldn't breathe and release the water it absorbed, so every beam rotted within years and had to be replaced. Why would the king be so particular about fire? And then, Kylar saw why. Along either side of the bridge were long wooden beams set on pivots. On the end of each beam was a huge clay globe, as wide as Kylar was tall. At least part of the clay was molded over iron, because a mooring rope was tied to an iron loop at the top of the globe. Several small handles also protruded from the sides. Pulling on one handle, Kylar found a bracket. As he slid it out, a wash of oil fumes swept over his face. It took him several precious seconds of staring at the entire contraption to understand. The arms would swing out over the side of the bridge, holding the globes full of oil, then drop them onto any boat passing underneath, and hopefully set it on fire in spectacular fashion. He rushed back to the gate and grabbed the torches the guards had been carrying. He closed and locked the gate quickly. The advance party of Caladorans were almost to the bridge. What am I doing? The first barge was just starting under the bridge. There was no time. Kylar kicked a safety latch holding the beam in place and pushed on it. It didn't move. He stumbled and almost tripped over taut ropes at his feet, cursed, and flung himself against the beam again. Hadn't the damned soldiers ever greased this thing? Finally, it occurred to him to use his talent. He felt power flowing through him. He could lift a wagon on his back. He pressed against the beam and could feel himself shimmering, the ragged black covering and uncovering his skin as he redirected his talent. If I'm lucky, they won't even know I'm here until it's too late. A ball of crackling green witch fire flew over the globe, missing it by a yard. Yells sounded from below. Whether the witches saw Kylar or just his torches, they weren't pleased. Kylar pushed against the beam, but with nothing to brace his feet against, he just slid across the planks. The beam barely moved. A ball of witchfire caromed off the globe and ricocheted up into the sky. Kylar ignored it. Something white was blooming above the deck of the barge, now directly under him. A small creature took shape in front of a red-haired witch and flying up like a hummingbird. The witch chanted, his vermarks thick with power, directing the creature. Kylar heaved, and the ropes at his feet tripped him hard. The homunculus took shape as it zoomed toward Kylar. It was small, barely a foot tall, and pasty pale. It wore the likeness of the red-haired witch, like ill-fitting clothes. It landed on the globe gently and then rammed steely claws into the iron as if it were butter. It turned to Kylar and hissed, baring its fangs. Kylar scuttled back and almost fell off the edge of the bridge. A concussion thudded below. The air in front of the red-haired witch rippled like a pond absorbing the shock of a thrown rock. Something was moving, as if it were just under the surface of the air. Something huge. Reality itself seemed to be stretching and tearing. Kylar saw hell and rushing skin as reality itself rippled under the pressure of the worm's passage. It was coming for him. 20 feet from him, reality flayed and tore. Kylar had one glimpse of a gigantic, lamprey-like circular mouth. It seemed to throw its mouth inside out in a spiny cone. Then, the narrowest ring of teeth hit the homunculus, and the teeth snapped in the opposite direction, tearing into the pasty creature. Each successive circle of teeth pulled and snapped into everything surrounding the homunculus with hideous strength, the cone inverting, sucking everything in. The last, widest row of teeth snapped closed on the widest part of the iron globe, and the pitworm whipped back into its hole as suddenly as it had emerged. The air rippled again, and then faded, as if nothing had happened. The homunculus was gone. So was three-quarters of the globe. Clay crunched and iron sheared off as if it were lard. Oil dribbled into the water beside the barge. The soldiers cheered. The first barge had passed the bridge, and the second barge was just emerging. Feeling weak, Kylar scooted back and almost fell on ropes again. He cursed loudly. Then his eyes followed the ropes. They were connected to a pulley system attached to the beam. I'm an idiot! Grabbing a rope, Kylar pulled it, hand over hand, as fast as he could. The arm supporting the second globe swung out over the side of the bridge smoothly and easily. Kylar heard a yell, and two green missiles flew past. Next to the pulley, there was another rope. Thin. Probably important. Kylar yanked it, and the beam holding the clay globe suddenly dropped. The globe dropped with it. For a moment, Kylar was afraid that he'd just dropped his only weapon straight into the water, but the mooring rope swung the globe like a pendulum a foot above the river. The globe slammed into the second barge at the waterline. There was no explosion. The side of the boulder that struck the barge was iron beneath a patina of fired clay. It burst through the side of the barge as if the hull were birch bark, and blasted through crowded ranks of Highlanders. The rest of the globe was clay. It disintegrated. The oil that filled the globe splashed violently over men and their gear, soaking the wood decks. Kylar looked at the barge from above. A nice hole gaped at the waterline, and the men inside were screaming. But he'd hoped for something more impressive. Boom! The barge exploded. Flames leaped out of the holes the globe had made and tore it to 3 times its original size. Fire burst from the portholes. The doubled and redoubled screams of men were swallowed in the sudden roar of flames. Men who'd been standing on the deck of the ship were thrown off their feet, and not a few of them into the water. Their armor dragged them hopelessly under the gentle waves. As quickly as it had sprung up, the gush of fire disappeared. Smoke continued to roll out of the portholes, and men were streaming up onto the deck. The barge listed heavily. An officer, bleeding from a gash on his head, was bellowing orders, but to no avail. Soldiers leapt from the deck to swim for the shore that looked so close, and dropped like rocks. The water wasn't deep, but with heavy armor, it was deep enough. Having paused for several moments to turn from feeding on oil to feeding on wood, the fire advanced again like an insatiable beast. Fire roared up out of every deck on the ship, and even as the barge drifted forward, Kylar saw it wasn't going to make it to shore. A few men had the sense to tear off their armor before they leaped overboard, and others were clinging to bridge pilings. But at least 200 Highlanders would never fight on Cenarian soil. The gate behind Kylar shook as something struck it. He cursed himself. He shouldn't have stayed, shouldn't have watched while he could have been running. No Cenarian soldiers had come running during his battle, and weren't coming even now, 2 minutes after the first signal. However bad this was, whatever was happening at the castle must be worse. The gate blew apart, and witches aglow with power strode through its smoking remains. Kylar ran for the castle.